And is it a major driver for the reduction of poverty, education,
education,
economic opportunities, etc.?
Right.
Yeah. And it's also very important for sustainable economic growth. And even all the discussions around skill shortages and all of that, I think we've got quite a vibrant provincial education system. It can lay the foundation properly for economic growth. See, it's vital for social cohesion. And it is important, we'll cover that in their own presentation, where the NEMS, National Education Infrastructure Monitoring System, there. Now, a number of issues are coming indeed up, you know, where you've got migration out of certain areas into other areas, with empty schools, and all of that there. And access to facilities has improved, I suppose. If one makes a comparison between 1994 and now. Now, when it comes to water, sanitation, electricity, even in that area, I think quite a remarkable success has been there. But still, we need to get to a point where every school, at least, has got some water, sanitation, and electricity. The issues around school libraries, labs, and sports fields, there is a substantial backlog in that area, and it's something that needs to be actually looked into. This slide basically just gives an indication of our pupil-teacher ratios, the number of learners educated in the school that you have. Yeah. So on average, the pupil-teacher ratio is 33 learners to one teacher. But if one takes into account, you know, your more wealthier kind of provinces like Gauteng and Western Cape, they employ quite the school governing body, they employ quite a large number of teachers as well. So if that is excluded, then the pupil-teacher ratio in those two provinces compared to others is relatively higher there. Improved access, particularly in our ECT colleges sector there, and I think part of this may be due to the recapitalization of these colleges. And that is that on engineering, we see quite a large enrollment there, and we expect that it could have a particular spin-off in the future for the economy there. But what is surprising is in terms of enrollment in rural areas, in rural provinces, for agriculture and tourism, where you've got low levels of enrollment there. Now this slide, the next slide, shows that education spending, where it was about in 2003 and 4, 60 billion, last year it was close to about 79 billion, and it is budgeted to grow to about 88.7 billion in this year, and it will reach about 107 billion by 2009 and 10. So by 2009 and 10, the education budget will be roughly about 30 billion rand. More, it will grow by roughly about 1/3. If we look at the share of education spending in total provincial spending, we see some kind of a downward trend here. Now let me explain this table a bit. This table, how we calculate the share, we take into account the education budget as it stands, the 78.9 billion, say for 2016-7, or the 88.7 billion in 2007-8. And we say provinces in total spend, for example, 210 billion. And then we say that as a share of that 210 billion is roughly about 42%. But if we strip out conditional grants, for example, and we strip out their own revenue in provinces, what you actually then see spending in education as a share of total spending, excluding grants and its own revenue, is in the order of about varying between about 49% to roughly about 53%. So you see there, but what is concerning though is the continuous downward slide. Even if we do that strip out, it continues actually to slide downwards there. This shows the composition of provincial spending. Then a large chunk of spending, 83% of it, goes to personnel. And here there is a bit of a concern, because we need to tighten the way we manage our personnel. If you've got such a large personnel component in the budget, how you manage it becomes quite important, you know, there is issues around golf teachers, issues around double parking, there's quite a number of issues that are actually coming into play here that needs to be closely monitored. That's on that side, but on the other side is we will see.
Mr. Brown, I'm sure Mr. Sokon is that 83% of that budget is compensation. You may want to comment later.
So it's quite a large cost driver, and the efficiency of our personnel is an issue that needs to be looked at. Say, are we getting value for money? Because service conditions compared to a few years ago and what we have now have improved quite considerably. So it is an issue there. No schools. Currently, we're spending about 3 billion roughly on no fee schools. We're covering roughly about 13,912 schools, about 5 million learners, which is quite a large chunk of learners. 41.8% of the learners are actually covered here. But what is important here is although you have this and it is in the budget, does this amount of money reach the schools becomes an issue, because if you tell a school you can't levy fees anymore, the school doesn't have that revenue. But if the revenue doesn't come in time to them, it becomes quite an issue that we're looking into as well. The provincial spending per learner, there where we had about 5,300 on average nationally, it grew to about 6,895 by 2067, and it's projected to be roughly about 9,045 rand by 2009 and 10. So we see a fairly kind of growth there. What we see though in the northwest is quite a dip in there, and that may be a problem inherent to that particular province. There. Now, even if you were putting demarcation there, even if you have demarcation, you don't expect that kind of stuff actually in there. What this graph will show is basically per learner spending on non-personnel, non-capital there. So if one takes, for example, KwaZulu-Natal, which is in blue there, you see that the level of spending on non-personnel and all capital is relatively low in that province. The same with probably the colorblind Eastern Cape and Free State relative to the other provinces. What this slide is showing is if you take out 66 billion, this is what's remaining within the budget of provinces there. So there's roughly about 20 billion or something, effect or close to that, left in provincial budget. A large chunk of it goes for administration, and one would expect that given the large size of the function basically itself there. But if one looks at the other component of spending and you look at the public special schools, for example, where you're spending about 2 billion, there is, you know, it is something that probably needs to be looked into in the future days. Now, I've picked on public special schools, and we looked into per capita spending. Basically, there, what we see is an upward trend in mostly all provinces. Right? But what is funny is in Limpopo, where you probably see that it goes up and then it dips, and in Mpumalanga it goes up and then it dips as well. I don't know what's happening. There's quite a bit of a funny kind of trend there. That's public special school. This ECD here would cover mainly your grade R. Or is grade R included in public order schools?
Mm-hmm.
So, it's a separate budget for it, yeah. We see it actually growing from 2003 and 4 from about 377 million to 545, and virtually increasing by over 400 million in 983 to 983 in 2007 and 8, and it's growing in the period ahead there. And on the performance side, I mean, we start now more on the This one is your grade R, but you can also include it as a training component of the people who are in social development are actually being trained by education. And part of this can actually be dealt with that. That is part of a problem, but I think he will cover it in his presentation. Because there is a discussion of where this thing should be located. Now, on education performance relative to input, output and quality of education remains a concern. I mean, we invest quite a lot, but the outcomes and output of it remain something that we need to talk about. Something that we can't ignore. While matriculation results are not the only measure, they do provide some kind of a sense of what's happening in our schooling system in terms of delivery. The matric pass rates improved from just under 50% in 1997 to about 70.7% in 2004, and have since declined to 68.3% and to 66.6% in 2006 there. However, if you look at percentages, you know, you see the decline, but the actual numbers of kids that wrote matric increase, and at the same time also the actual number of kids that passed matric actually increased as well. I think compared to 2004, in 2006 roughly about 21,000 extra learners passed matric there. Then what you see here is basically a comparison for kids who pass with education with university involvement per province there. So in the Eastern Cape, the blue is in 2004 and the yellow orange is roughly about in 2006. You have a bit of problems in Free State, KZN, Limpopo, Northern Cape, and slightly to some extent to the Western Cape. So 16.3% obtained university endorsement in 2006 compared to 18.2% in 2004. So there is a bit of a concern in that particular area. Yeah. And maths and science there. What we see there shows basically the trend of the number of children who actually wrote and passed mathematics. There. Growing number of passes in math and science over time, except for science standard grade, which declined. The Dinaledi school aims to increase the number of math and science passes in disadvantaged schools. So you've got in these schools where you've got math higher grade passes that grew there, and science higher grade passes actually grew there. So the challenge is ahead. Is notwithstanding the progress made in a number of challenges and policy questions that actually remain. Outputs and outcomes are not responding fast enough to growth in spending. Right. Enrollment and the number of passes in mathematics and science on the higher grade remain low. That's also a problem there in terms of, you know, the kind of skills that we need to drive economic growth in the country. Many schools are still without proper physical structures and basic amenities such as water, sanitation and electricity, and it's something that needs to be looked into. The supply chain management processes are not always effective in ensuring that learner support materials are procured and delivered to the school ahead of time. Thanks.
Now, the National Department of
requirement of education. Dispute or consent. Or interpret. Help one to interpret differently. Let's say what you want to say.
Thank you, Chair. In fact, we've agreed during lunch with Treasury, if I may say on a lighter note, that they're going to praise us and we are not going to praise ourselves. So, well, they were talking of improvement all the time and in the end they came to challenge it. But just to get down then to the serious level, Chair, thank you for the opportunity of presenting our responses to this committee. I'd also just like to thank the provincial colleagues, heads of departments from KwaZulu-Natal, Northwest, that are present here, senior representatives from Gauteng, Eastern Cape, and Free State, in assisting in this particular process. Chair, firstly, our response is that this comprehensive review for the period 2003 to 2010 of the fiscal situation in provinces is welcome. The review is very clear and succinct and does accurately reflect the situation in education. We acknowledge that relatively on worldwide comparisons we are well resourced in education, yet perform poorly. We acknowledge provincial inequality from 1995 continue to be overcome. However, in the presentation I will be raising some issues of concerns around equity. And then without repeating what's in the report and what Treasury has presented, in this presentation we raise some concerns about the outcomes of the report, not the report, but the outcomes of the report in regards to legacies and provincial equity. Chair, I've changed the presentation slightly by adding just a few more analysis graphs so colleagues will just find a bit of a difference. The concern is while real growth in education expenditure is noted, it is not sufficient. Education expenditure of 5% of GDP, while comparable internationally, it has dropped from about 6.3% in 1995. So in terms of the shares, we have dropped, but in terms of the growth. So wherever there has been growth in the budget, it has gone to other areas other than education. The larger part of the total education spend as a proportion of total government expenditure has declined from 22.6% in 1995 to 17.7% in 2006. And this is using the UNESCO methodology of total government expenditure including local government. If we use a national treasury basis of just using national and provincial government expenditure as a proportion, we then find that this decline is still 27.9% to 20%. And in both cases, it continues to decline going forward. The falling shares of education, as Treasury colleagues have indicated, of education expenditure from a share of 51%. Now, I want to clarify again that we understand and we accept that 51 is not a budget decision. It is a basis of allocation in the equitable share. But we use it as a benchmark just to compare. And we have always said that if the 51% is not correct, then perhaps let's adjust it. But we are saying initially as a nation that this is what we want to see our government expenditure being used for. But in the end, what gets articulated, and there's a number of processes in which it gets articulated, the issue of equity, inequity is going to come out very strongly as I move forward with the presentation. And from a 51% to an actual 45.7% is, as pointed out now, and then declining to 48.1% over this period, going to 2009-10. Yet, we still have backlogs in infrastructure, in school allocation, in class sizes, in textbook, in grade R allocation, and the issues in AVET persist. What is of serious concern is the inequity. In other words, it depends on which province you are a citizen of. And if you find yourself lucky in that province, you will get much more state and government services. So, while the grade R, which is classified as ECD, in the presentation of Treasury, while the grade R budget is growing, the per capita is 1,253. And the question, as opposed to the per capita for ordinary schools of 9,000. So while those budgets are growing, we're not going to be able to, if we don't find an injection, we have put a bit in, but if we don't inject into the grade R, we are not going to be able to make the target for 2010 meaningfully. So we may be providing a very low level of service. And interprovincial inequalities in education, while narrowing from 1995, as we acknowledge, continue to be present. Our performance on international, regional, as well as national assessments are worrying. So, this particular graphic is the one that was shown also by Treasury. But I would like, I just want us to note, for example, if we look at the Northwest, in 2003 they were sitting on 48% of the share, that's an expenditure. In other words, when you take the expenditure as a share, it's articulated to 48 instead of 51, for example. And it moved down really to 35.6 in 2019. And so too with a number of other particular provinces. You will see that no province here is on 50 or 51. So that means something is happening, and we need to, and it's not within our powers, always in that of provincial education department, but something has happened provincially, which I think we need to get to the bottom of. We don't have a problem in education. We always say that if the funds that need to go for other social activities and they enhance education, it's fine. But it's of concern. Now, this is a place. This looks like a very funny graph. I don't think it's in the. This one is not in the handout, but I just use it as an example that if we use the equitable share rate of 1, it is a light blue bar that is in the Eastern Cape, it's that light blue bar, or in the Free State, that one. And we can see what the percentage of the equitable share really provinces are being allocated. Gauteng province is really far below, they're around the 80s. Western Cape is around the 80s. And perhaps we need to find out perhaps just the correct level of funding. What is it that they're doing well? Perhaps they started off from a strong base. So, in terms of the priorities that we've set ourselves up, it's increasing participation in the measurement of education output through international, regional, as well as country assessments. And we want to extend the assessments that are done, the measurements of learner achievement, both in terms of frequency and in terms of coverage. And provinces have set aside funds for this to be able to extend assessment. The extension of universal assessment to every school, increasing teacher remuneration and reward are on the table at the moment in terms of the OSD, so the occupation specific dispensation. We have a national framework for teacher development because we've identified that our key input is teachers, and our solution really in terms of the quality dilemma lies in dealing with the issues of the measurement of teacher performance, of the development of educators, and of ensuring that their quality and competence increases. So it's improving continuous professional development. We're also setting up in principle, it's been agreed by the minister, she's made a public announcement. Some people, we prefer to call it the National Education Evaluation Unit, but also I think we need to say that that's going to be the inspectorate. An arm's length organization from the, a unit from the Department of Education, from a national level, will begin to inspect and evaluate independently teachers. Teacher recruitment inspecting at the medical site while we reskilling and retooling current employees. And this seeker recruitment includes four short-term solutions to the recruitment of foreign educators so that we can reskill and retool current educators. Revitalization of special schools, improve funding and the delivery of infrastructure. We just released a report which was presented to both Cabinet and the President's Coordinating Committee, and that report on infrastructure really shows that there's been tremendous improvement with the amount of resources that provinces have. So there's been great improvement. However, the legacy and the shortfall is so large that even that improvement doesn't make a dent. And therefore, our initial estimations, very, very initial estimations, at the current level of norms, and we know what the current level of norms are, it's schools without fences, schools without lawn, just plain simple structures would cost us in the vicinity of 36 billion rand to be able to deal with those shortfalls. So we are exploring innovative delivery mechanisms and innovative funding mechanisms to be able to deal with that. And as part of that mandate, we will be having discussions with a range of role players, including National Treasury. And then to provide additional and meaningful resources for grade R and early childhood development 0 to 4 and explore using ICTs in education. Here, I've come from an angle of saying that I wouldn't want to repeat what is said in the government fiscal the review, but I want to come from an angle of equity, inequity, inequality, and begin to use the numbers in a different particular way just to be able to look at it. If we look at learner educator ratios, which translates to class size, we can see that under pressure are the Eastern Cape, Gauteng, KwaZulu-Natal. The Popo is moving on the trajectory of reducing their learner educator ratio. Northwest having moved down, but the Western Cape. And if we look at the national, we can see that Western Cape and Gauteng are under the most pressure in terms of the average, in terms of class sizes. In terms of
the number here are very high in case at hand. Look at this one.
Yeah.
The numbers are very high in case at hand. Not in Khaldi. Case at hand, Eastern Cape, are very high. Okay. I mean, this is exactly the issue that we need to talk about. Can't be my patient. Look at the numbers here. Let me show you the page. While you put it. No, it's page 10. Public ordinary school statistics by province. Eastern Cape is 2 million. Gauteng is 1 million. Mm-hmm. Page 10. Public ordinary school statistics by province, 2006. Mm-hmm. Table 2.3. I'm saying Eastern Cape is 2.1 million. Educators are 64,000. Gauteng is 1.6 million, educators 47,000. KZN is 2.6, the biggest. Learners, 81,000 educators. Limpopo is 1.9. Can be migration. Let's have the tools to correct the story. What is that?
Okay, I will, Gauteng is here and they will be able to answer, but I could already just give you one speculative answer, and the issue is both Gauteng and the Western States have a greater proportion of quintile 5 schools, and because of that, quintile 5 schools, these are only publicly resourced educators, so if we take the governing body, educators may come right, but Gauteng and Western States then have the space to utilize that fund that they save in terms of, they do have a low learner educator ratio if we take privately employed educators into account to be able to apply for other equity issues. So these are the percentages in which provinces are either above or below. Gauteng sits on 90% of the learner-educator ratio, using a baseline of 35. Free State is quite generous in terms of having it at 1.13. So Free State has a generous learner-educator ratio. Well, what we use a benchmark of 35. And using a benchmark of 35, we think that the Free State is 113% of that 35. That means they have a lower learner-educator ratio. Jay, in terms of the low-fee school allocation, the table is in the IGFR, but the issue is here, the policy was clearly to treat all poor learners equally the same. There are provinces that are still battling. For example, the national special figure is 738 and 677. And Chair, you asked the question previously, and you can see now where Gauteng is now investing the savings that they get from public posts. In other words, because there's a lot more private posts, that they utilize it in school allocation. So they've given Gauteng Quintal 1 and 2 738 rand. The special figure is 677. So clearly they've done that. But if you look at a learner, if you're a learner in the Eastern Cape, and you are in the poorest quintile, you'll get 555 rand. But if you are a learner in Gauteng, you'll get 738 rand. And if you're in Mpumalanga, you'll get 829 rand. Mpumalanga has also gone beyond the minimum threshold. That is the biggest worry in terms of the equity issues, is that we are still not being able to fund learners equitably. And I think what we need to do is to find out what is the 600 rand or 700 rand for 200 school days is around 3 rand 50 a day per learner. That is what we're spending on resources. Anyway, it just boggles my mind to say, what is it that would $3.50 per child per day? They probably just use paper to that particular amount, electricity. So,
in fact, you should be telling us solutions to this. Precisely because you are at the center.
Well, do sir.
Now, if people are doing, I mean, the problem is that these inequalities, problem. And part of the problem is migration. Precisely because people would want to go to better resource places. And so how do we deal with that? And so the sender must then be able to say, this is the line. Now, I mean, this is how we must move in terms of that line. Should be opening your mind.
Bless you. So, just in terms of the targets, we can see that the Eastern Cape is below the target. If you look at the line 1 that's running through, Eastern Cape is below target. Free States are below the target, but close to it. KwaZulu-Natal, Limpopo, Northern Cape, Northwest. The per capita expenditure, we also saw the figures as a per capita expenditure, but we look at it from an equity point of view. In terms of what provinces are spending on average per learner, and we will see that the Northern Cape spends 117%, so perhaps that's understood because of the geographical region. But the issue is KwaZulu-Natal on 90%, Eastern Cape on 93%, Northwest on 91%, and then we can see what has happened now. Either Northwest is going to get rid of a lot of teachers because of the current budget going down, but the issue is that in terms of the figures printed in their budget, they're not going to be able to come out unless they let a lot of teachers go. Chair, that's the end of my presentation. But I just wanted to, if you give me 5 more minutes, I just have some analysis slides that I needed to show. This is the chart that we've got in our school funding norms that talks about what is the poverty across the country. And in Sapura's quintile 1 and 2, in the Eastern Cape, 57% of our learners fall in the category of poor. In the Free State, 46%, in Gauteng, 22%, in Limpopo, 56%, in Mpumalanga, 37%, in the Northwest, 38%, and in the Western Cape, 15%. And I just wanted to put this picture in mind in terms of whether the equitable share is equitable, and if not, what are the possible issues that we should begin to look at. I'm not going to go through all that. This is the graph of the total education expenditure over GNP. So we can see that we were quite high in the 91 to 97 period. And as a percentage of government expenditure, doesn't mean that we haven't got increases in real expenditure. But if we did keep in line with past sectors, we could have had a more equitable education system. This is a graph, and I'm just going to show you one example of the effect. And we'll spend some time on this, the effect of the equitable share. The first bar there, the light blue one, alright, is what the province actually spends. So Eastern Cape, of all the money, if you put all the provincial money together, Eastern Cape spends 16.3% of it. The equitable share is an indication that the Eastern Cape shares 16.9%. So, in other words, they spent below what the equitable share formula benchmark is. However, in terms of expenditure to personnel, they spent 17.1%. So, they spend more on personnel in terms of percentage share than other provinces. Compare that always to the 16.9. If we look at the public school learners, they have 17.9% of the share of learners in the country. So they get 16.3% of the resources for 17.9% of the learners. However, the other things that are not very nice, they only contribute 9.7% of the, I'm looking for this, special school learners, right? So that means there is a lot of space. If we say that spectrum needs are equitably distributed, that means the Eastern Cape is neglecting spectrum needs. In terms of ethnic colleges and the skills that we spoke about, the Eastern Cape only has 11.3%. They only contribute 11.3% towards the FET enrollment. Independent schools, 8.8, well, that may not be too bad. In terms of the number of educators, the one was education expenditure, 17.5, so they've got more educators than the share that they would have received from 16.9, so we must measure 16.9. In terms of the number of schools, they've got 23.5% of the schools. That means there's a possibility of either inefficiency, because they're small, Manana schools all over, or the issue is that the geographical terrain forces them to have that number of schools. The number of no-fee learners, and this is where the biggest pressure and inequity pressure is, that they have 24.5% of the share of the country of quintile 1 and 2 learners. However, you can see that the share that they get. So everything that's above the 16.9 is going to be a bit of a difficulty. In terms of the national senior certificate pass rate, with the amount of resources they get, they're 11.7%. So if we think everything has to be equal, they should contribute 16.9%. The number of passes in math, this is quite interesting, that in terms of the number of passes on math, they contribute 14.2%. It's a really interesting statistic, that they're doing well, comparatively, they're really up there in terms of the share. It shows you with size. But mathematics higher grade is 7.8 and mathematics and science is like it. So I've got these particular graphics for all the provinces that begin to compare. And this is the Gauteng graphic. Yes, so we will get it Did you want to talk to the other professor?
No.
No. Okay. Okay. Okay, I'm done. Just a presentation. Now, I'm not sure if you want me to respond to those particular issues that were raised. I did cover some of them. I think the big one that we need to talk about is the ECD grade R. Now, in our educational budget, we have placed ECD because we undertook to take the responsibility in terms of policy development around 0 to 4 and including the issue of curriculum and program development. However, that's a very small amount. Our major expense under what we call ECD, because ECD is defined as 0 to 6. But that component of ECD that falls, 0 to 9, that component of ECD that falls from grade R to grade 3 is what education system. So when you look at budgets of saying ECD, it means it's grade R specifically. We don't fund any sites 0 to 4. However, there's an integrating element with social development and health, where social development is responsible for the registration of sites and the providing of subsidies to those institutions. We have taken on it, I would say, as an agency basis, the issue of the training of practitioners. Thank you.
You see, the problem here is that there's one person, and this is the point that these things must talk to each other. For instance, in one, I just forget the member of parliament. Oh, it is Madam Masilu, chairperson of social development. There is one, I suspect it's a crutch or whatever, gender is a defender, whose owner is ill-treating children, such that these kids are scared to go to the crutch anymore. Now clearly that might have an impact on their growth. And this is why I'm saying this 0 to 4 must be able to talk to 0 to 9. Can be a gap in between. I think we must find it. But then, members, there's a problem that I think this discussion has been useful in the sense that it has exposed this problem. We have seen this problem yesterday in the equitable share that's under budgeting for health. We've seen the same problem in under budgeting for health. Now it is coming out again in education. Now what it does is also, in fact, in violation of the norm. So the critical question therefore is where does this money go to in terms of the equitable share, which is supposed to be going to this sector, especially education one as that sector. If you've seen the presentation that was done now, they are declining province by province. And therefore, what are the implications? The question that National Treasury raises is whether provinces are prioritizing education. And so, clearly this discussion has been able to expose that kind of a terrible trend. And so, we've got to find a way of engaging provincial exports. Clearly, each provincial ESCOM must then be able to say to us, in terms of our own priorities, we felt we must chop and change in the three areas. But then the problem is, whilst you've got finance, what is interesting again in terms of this,
These are all are also beneficiary portfolios of the infrastructure grant to provinces. Three of them. Road, health, and education. Now, what is happening here? So clearly, we need to find a way of engaging and engaging big time with the ex-coach, but also with the provincial treasurer. But I'm not sure. They might be cutting this budget, wanting to use the infrastructure grant as a supplement. But again, it is not coming out clear in terms of the submissions made to yesterday and today. I think that's where the problem lies when we will be dealing with the provincial governors. Okay, let's then engage in terms of questions, comments, and clarity. Mr. Porter?
Yes. Yes. On treasury page 3, did I say school library? Now I'm coming back, lady. It's both arts and culture. There's grants given to them to for libraries. The macro was Lampoko for 22 million rand and end of August. Not a single cent was spent. That's from treasury. Now, that don't link up for me. Why is there a shortage of libraries, schools, but money is not spending, 22 million rand? Can't she hear me?
Yeah.
The first time that she can't hear me.
My ear is getting old in the
deck. But I sit next to the chairperson, she must come and sit next to her. Okay, what I'm saying, the libraries is a problem, laboratories, schools, sports fields and things. But that is a sport, art and culture is 22 million from the province is given to as a grant. But end of August, no, not a single cent was spent. Now, there's a problem in regarding of this process. And also, the teachers, I think this, on page 4, what is the temporary teachers? Those who are not full, there's a lot of them, about 2,500 in the Popo, is not full-time, temporary teachers. They still be paid. What is the situation there in regarding of that allocation for money. Kids and then personnel, 83% the teacher. But I mean if you're looking to the ratio of the school to 35 to 1, like Limpopo, and I think their personnel is also very big spending there. How will you reduce that? In regarding of the ratio to kids to a teacher in regarding of that process. Here and then another issue is what really is a big issue. And I know this also in the finance of the province is the no fee school. I raise it every time that one school, 5 kilometers from that school, one school is a no-fee school, the other one had to pay. Now, suddenly, children moving from one school to another school because of this. And I don't know how we will resolve that problem, because it's the same community, same people, in the same villages, everything is exactly the same. One is paid, the other one is not paid. That's really an issue in regarding of that thing.
Thank you, Chef. Where my wife is?
This province has only done 1 kilometer.
Yeah. And look, this is getting the 23% of the low school budget. Then the rest goes to everyone else except Celtic. the problem. So, I think that I want to pick up on the question that Konoji Bota has raised around the your personal election is 83%. We all know that education is would depend on what you call on personnel. However, only 17% is left for non-capital, non-expenditure. Is this what you call the trend, Sarah, that we want to keep? How do we ensure that schools have got necessary learning materials out there? And it will be difficult, for instance, if we don't improve on this 83%. What is it, Sarah, that is being done to ensure that at least there will be material getting out there to see? And the other question,
just before you proceed, you see the problem is that if capital spending is 17%, now the first problem is that, one, I'm not sure whether there is a plan, but the problem is that, again, you will depend on the infrastructure grant, which is a bit problematic. But number two, issues of building of new schools, maintenance, etc., is another problem. So clearly, I think that's a key problem which needs urgent attention. Now, I'm not sure because he says one province has to share thousands of teachers in trying to address some of the problems. I'm not sure what the bigger plan is from the national level in terms of this personal spending. That's
our
capital spending. But what
claims
do we have?
Proceed, Mr. Sure, Chairperson. And the other comment related to that is the issue of the percentage spent on education generally. Clearly, in the earlier years, it raised from 40-something%, now it's 50-something%. And clearly, they are competing what you call the needs in terms of, in terms of this, because it can be education, else has to be education and other things. And then we depend on what you're saying, the person, on the conditional grant. But the problem that we have is the outcome. What is it? You know, in the past, I mean, generally, if you go to school, especially in the your format with advanced school, if you're doing skills work, if somebody is to be sent to a college to do skills work, that person is regarded not as somebody who really can make it if he's taking an academic direction. But if they see that when this one of this child has got challenges, then it's directed to that. But it seems that we will not improve on our skills if then we think that skills development is for students who can't make it. Yet very few of them can make it to university. Also, just financially. What is being done to encourage students to ensure that they also take up the way that is running away. But also, how do we ensure that we improve the skills development of the country? Our economy is booming, but we're not producing enough people so, to participate in that.
For everyone, the thing is similar for everyone. Mind block is good.
No, I see. Okay.
Yeah, so the other thing that is not raised here is the ICT. is raised, there is like the department, you know, is spending a lot of money giving schools computers and what. I don't know in other provinces, but I know in South East. There's my friend, he can attest to this. You install them today, tomorrow they are gone. There's no computer in that school. The next day. You want me to tell you a joke? They stole them at one time at their own head office. At one time. Now, what is it? But, I mean, that money, is that the value of what you call the, is there value for money there? If we, there's no security for this, what you call the very necessary, for these computers, there's no security. Very little security is given. They are stolen in schools every day. So, and the department of education has taken a view that says it wants to have nothing to do with security. I'm talking now about warm bodies at schools at night. And that is the time that is what you call a computer school. What kind of expenditure is that? That's futile, what you call it, expenditure. If we install, we're going to install computers every day in the morning, in the afternoon, and they're not being looked after, it's not going to work. It's not going to affect anyone. But also, the training of those people who must train those students there at school, what is being done about that? I mean, only 17% is supposed to be that as well. I still owe a school, a response to a school in my constituency. They say to me, look, our students during break, they go out because there's no place to play in the school. That's one school. In fact, all the schools, 99% of the schools in my area don't have sporting fields. I see here, but I don't know what the sport is doing here in this report, because we know, the National Department of Education knows, that in the township school, that is known as the same. When I say township, I just mean those schools outside your, what you call it, your town situation. It's known as the same. Who is responsible for this, what you call it? For the sports fields at school. Because they are not there. The other one, the North East School, my friend there has commented on this. But the problem, Chairperson, I think that you have heard about this, is that when the department, for instance, identifies a North East School, what is the criteria? They are working on a simple criteria that looks at the number of buildings around the school. They don't look at the children that attend that school, coming from those, what they call the areas that are supposed to be less than quintal one area. They attend that school. And therefore, this issue, is the education department attending to this matter? Because if you don't do that, what I was talking about is going to happen, because many people, our constitution says the child has got the right to education, but when this child can't have access to education because the child has to pay school fees that the parents do not have, what do we do? Thank you.
There are two big issues. Whilst you're talking about computers being stolen, what then becomes the role of the communities, SGB's communities? Well, it's the same communities that buy same stolen goods. I think that's the one. But secondly, you're talking issues of no fee schools, but how does this also relate to to indigent policies of municipality. Because there's also those kinds of tools in respect of the municipality. And how do we deal with this thing of the no-fee schools? But what?
Let me start with this topical issue called the no-fee schools. I just want to put more emphasis on this issue. Because the number of schools, and so that are closer to maybe to those schools that you can call the equivalent to now, that have been declared no-fee schools, are actually out of that loop of Kinder 1 and Kinder 2. And what I would like to get from the department is, what are the measures that they are putting in place to ensure that those communities that are excluded because of the manner in which we define equivalent in the current arrangement, what measures are there from the side of the department to correct that because people can, if people were empowered, they could take us to court and win for discriminating them. So we need to also to move very fast in terms of collecting those. We can't wait for Statistics South Africa and Department of Provincial and Local Government to redefine best equivalent in line with the new arrangements of war. But we need just to deal with it head-on, on the spot. So that's the response I'd like to get from the National Department. Because we've been making these resolutions in the House from the side of the portfolio committee to say department must review this thing gets cleaned up and budget for the what is called the condensation. Those people who condense that they are supposed to be part of those cleaners, but that they are not. The department needs to budget for those condensations. So we're saying budget more money. So that you are, from that conversation, you accommodate a number of those that are deserving cases, but unfortunately fall outside the Kingdom 1 and Kingdom 2. So that's one way of dealing with it. The second issue that we've been raising also with the FSC, this one relates to the under-budgeting that we talked about. The FSC formula says expanding the education from 0 to 17 years, from grade R to grade 12. That's what that document says in that formula, the education component. From 0 to 17. A kid who starts a school having completed 6 years on the 7th year will complete to grade 12 on the 18th year. And to me, that is a problem. So already, there is a problem there in terms of you are undercutting the bit in terms of what is supposed to go to education. We've been raising that, okay, with the FSC. And there's one also other area that we also need to look into. There's also another area related to the level of schools that I forgot to mention. There are schools that are told that your staff establishment entitles you to about 4 educators, and which does not take into consideration the number of streams there and the number of learning areas, let alone the stream, learning areas. And they are forced those SDPs of schools that are declared no-fee schools to appoint on their own SDP trained educators. It actually goes into the face of the very reason why we declared them no-fee schools, because we have about two educators,
open one school, Govinda Basila has opened another school. Yes, if it is paying two educators there, it has been declared a no-fee school. So how do we deal with those issues? I'm hoping that the norms and standards that are indicated in the Education Laws Amendment here, are also going to address that. The portion that deals with gender, class size, teacher-to-teacher ratio, and so on and so forth. I'm hoping it will begin to deal and tamper with that teacher market model and address the problem. But with respect to gender norms and science reflected in that Education Laws Amendment, I just wanted to get a sense, when does that, do you intend to ensure that it kicks in, that that Education Laws Amendment is? Because in the gender norms and standards, on capacity of schools, on a number of issues, infrastructure, teacher-pupil ratio, and other things, it can address the inequities that are there in the schools currently. But when is it kicking in? And in terms of budget, has you budgeted for the financial implications of that bill if it's going to kick in 2008-2009 financial year? Lastly, Jefferson, it's on infrastructure. We talk of the building of classrooms, and we really talk of building of schools. And there's a difference between two. Currently, we are building classrooms because of the challenge of accommodation in schools. We are not building schools. Hence the question that was raised by Mr. Sogoni on the playing grounds and other things, the halls and all sorts of and laboratories and all other things that are important to be a school. So I'm saying our budgeting process should also deal with those issues, so that we begin to move away from this disaster by building schools. And the other question, number.
Some of your provinces have also cities that are building stadiums, and some of them, because of that, do not have capacity to be rebuilding stadiums. I just want members, to appeal to members, just to look at the submission and look at specific questions for the Free State, because they are still building an airport there to be on an international scale. If you've got questions for KZN, I think KZN is not a no problem of such problems. Let's say Gauteng also has millions of flights into Johannesburg. Well, Wodka, at least they also have a huge airport that is aspiring to be international. Do we have specific questions for them so that we will then allow the national department, because we want to release them? Of course, this discussion is very useful, because they will have also to come back again in November. This discussion is going to proceed in November. But this one was key because it has raised exactly the problem that your own provincial residents are doing. Just in terms of reducing your own equity of the share allocation. So do we have very specific questions for the Eastern Cape, Free State, KZN, and Gauteng, so that we might release them?
Around the someone is pointing at something. I want to ask this.
On the submission by the National Department on page 8, around the per capita expenditure, I see the other province, 100 and something, 100 and something. I'm not very clear about this one because it's in life. But the kingdom there does not give 90 of this money. What are the implications of this? I'm not very clear. I'm not concerned about this. But what are the implications of this? In terms of service tools. But the National Department again is in a lady. That's the question I forgot to ask. We're creating the
National Department. We have answered that.
Okay.
That's the only question.
That's the only question.
Alright. Let me then. There's no problem with of flying. Let me just go to.
Yes, that's what
the free problem. You know, it would be unfair. Then we're not even raised, I think. But let me just throw it so that we see it. You must take a chance, let me see. If you're looking at the spending per lena in the first stage, it seems to be the second highest across the MCF. But then it becomes the highest in the outer year. 09, 10,000 rand. This is page 9 on this presentation by Treasury, National Treasury. Now, what are the implications here? Have you looked at this? But also, does this talk to the kind of outcomes that we see in the system, especially as expressed by the matrix results? Does this spending talk properly in terms of value for money, for instance, in terms of those matrix results? If you're looking at 06-07, for instance, 05-06 was much higher than other provinces except the Northern Cape. 04-05 again, 07-08 again. If you look at that, in fact, again, we're behind the Northern Cape, 8,294. So, does that talk to reality? The way you look at it. Let me see.
And the Eastern Cape. What is 10.1% in terms of the
university?
So university entrance. No, I'm saying Eastern Cape. The pass rate is Eastern Cape, but less than Eastern Cape. And of the students who wrote, only 10% of them got the exemption. What is it? It's on page 27 in the record.
Okay.
Yes. What is being done by Eastern Cape to improve? We heard here that now Eastern Cape is being well in terms of that was information. I don't know what it meant, but with the results here, they show that Eastern Cape has not done well.
There's another school there, I don't want to joke, in the afternoon, I remember a certain principal in the morning was on TV. He said he didn't know why, because no one passed at this school.
Eastern Cape again,
the following. Is it prudently invested, the value for money? If what Mr. Shokoni is saying, the value for money here, what is it that needs to be done, that must be done, to ensure that this is correctly done?
Let me thank you very much, Chairperson, and also thank the honorable members and invitees to this occasion or to this meeting. I take your word, which says that you might have been there in agriculture and brought about some changes, but remember that this department is more bigger and got more bigger problems than what you might have faced. And I think in fact it's a challenge which I would actually want to take head on in the province of the Free State, and I hope that I'll get continued support from your esteemed committee. But I'm not going to give a response to this. I'm going to give my CFO just to give a response to the fact that whether is there value for money which you are getting when the trick results actually give information contrary to the investment level which we have faced.
Thank you, Chairperson. With your permission, I would like to make Chairperson the following remarks pertaining to the observation of the expenditure of the land and the state proposed to the output of our education system in the province. Chairperson, when you look at our teacher-learner ratio in the Free State, it says on paper that the Free State is having a very favorable teacher-learner ratio. But I think it is important that we explain that when you go to the contextual factors in the province, you'll find that the Free State is about more than 600 farm schools. And these farm schools, Jefferson, you've got one teacher per every farm school. This means that the problem can spend in that kind of a situation differently from a situation where you've got an ordinary, let's say, town council school with about 500 learners. Because on the one hand, it appears that it is a very desirable people ratio. But the quality of education in that school, where one teacher to all the subjects in that school, is a problem. And therefore, there's got a very interpretation on the overall result and the outcome of education in the system. And so, when we look at these interpretations, we should not forget the contextual situation in the province. The other interpretation that I think is also very important is the interpretation of this figure.
Sorry, can you just speak to the mic?
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. I was saying that apart from the contextual situation of the rurality of the province, Chairperson, is that when you analyze the situation in the ordinary secondary township schools, you will realize that, for instance, the majority of our ex-modern schools, because they are not being necessarily favored by this apparently favorable and acceptable ratio, you find that they have also gone the way of hiring out of their own funds one or two teachers to assist. So this shows that on paper it does not really refer to the practical situation in the province. When you look at our technical and comprehensive school chapter, you will see that the norms and standards for the funding of schools does not necessarily address the unique situation of these focus schools. For instance, you find that some of these schools' equipment is an old and outdated kind of equipment. And our view is that these focal schools are actually feeding into our technical education so as to strengthen the field base in the country. And therefore, we have also identified the gaps within that our technical and comprehensive tools on the raw end of the situation in terms of the funding of schools. And the last thing, Chairperson, is that when you look at the trend in the output in terms of the grade 12 pass rate, which we all agree that the grade 12 result is not the only indicator of the health of education in a province. We agree that the grade 12 results have not been very well since, I think, 3 years ago. What we have noticed in the province is that we had a special program called the Holistic Intervention Program, which assisted the province in producing better results. But since we abandoned that that program, our view is that the results have begun to take a dip, and therefore we are really looking at reintroducing that holistic intervention. Unfortunately, the holistic intervention itself requires a lot of financial investment. And so it will require a lot that we spend more money on the compensation because we had to hire additional staff to pursue that program. So these are the few remarks, and if you want to say innovation to the questions about the stage.
Thank you very much. I think you've raised another interesting angle, and I'm not sure. It's a matter that I think must be prioritized. How do you approach the education budget? Now, also in the context of some schools, where you might have one teacher for all subjects, now how do you deal with that? But how do you then ensure that there is quality education in that kind of a school? I think that's the bottom line. Surely, part of what must come out of this report then is also that kind of issue in the realm. Because if you've got this kind of a problem, then it means that this spending a kind of misleading lie. In fact, what he's doing really here is we're just catching up the surface in respect of wanting to ensure that education becomes quality and therefore the skills issue is addressed. So I'm just saying, I think let's also plead with the education department as they are budgeting for 08-09. Let's have a sense of this form of budget that seeks to address these problems, but also how do you create an organogram that seeks to ensure that this education, the educator does not deal with five subjects. I mean, if it does, it's a funny overload. How do you ensure quality? I think part of the critical issue here is also for the provinces to how do you then deal with quality out of this scenario? How does the national department deal with some quality in terms of this thing? So clearly, I think in the 08-09 budget, we need to be able to see this thing clearly. How are you? The majority of provinces in this country are very rural, and therefore would have this problem. You would have in so many rural schools that is one or two educators who are then dealing with almost every subject. How do you deal with it in the context of this equitable share that is kind of being compromised on a daily basis? Surely we've got to deal with this matter. Right, that was the first case. SG, Eastern Cape.
No, I want to comment on some of the issues that have been raised in the context of the topic. One question that is
raised. Oh, you are asking.
Yeah,
asking.
I want to comment on the school level, liberalism, what is that in terms of the infrastructure, we are preparing to build schools, not just as a religion, as a long term. But because the Eastern Cape is characterized by a number of problems in terms of we are facing in an approach that says just provide us the fact that our learners exist under a roof and face in the other elements and lessons. So that is the approach which is part of our general. And that would include then what it means, fencing, water, electricity, and telecommunication. And in bringing that then, some of the problems that have been taken to be like the problem of what has come to be playing. I think that is one. The second comment I want to make, Chairperson, is in relation to how we intend to deal with the local schools. In the essential, of course, we have declared Pillar 1 as local. But there are challenges in the declaration of local. In some ways, yes. And the communities that contest the allocation of the land. The second challenge is in terms of the prescript. There is a particular question for a particular position of school that can be declared in Pillar 1, 2, as local schools. A particular threshold. And that was in the same case, we've raised that threshold for Pillar 1. But in the conversations that you face, you will find out that these schools that are on conversation are the ones that are protected. And if you look at them, you find that in the same situation as one, we are in Pillar 2 or Pillar 1. And therefore, it becomes classified in the capital sheet that the school can contest precise things that they need. But on the other side, for the interest of that, you will have finished for this the threshold for publication of local schools in that particular. So this is one thing. And as you can get them, we have put up a plan which proposed that voluntarily, the schools in Pillar 2 should be kept as local schools. It's all one way that comes. But it does not necessarily solve it all, but one way or the other way, solve the problem, take another one. The other thing that I want to comment on is the question of the staff and staff. That is my son says, it is true to say, in terms of the model of provision, it would be important if there would be a minimum number of teachers that is provided. I mean, that's what I mean. And therefore, we in terms of our budget program for 2008-2009, we are putting up a proposal to tell us that we'd like to present ourselves and say, we want to propose a minimum number of teachers that can be allocated to irrespective of the provision model. And that becomes a debate which is inserted in the provision model. But as a government, we are presenting that. So I'm saying schools that have got two teachers, one teacher, we want to propose that there must be a minimum number of teachers. That is given to any country. So that's what we are coming to. And the other thing I want to comment check on, which I think is important, is the safety. These are the ICT problems. So we are facing the same problems in the case of work. That the good computers today and they are gone. It is the same thing.
as part of our infrastructure service in Marijuana, we have also prioritized the part. When Emma was building the school, we also said there must be the end to the school. So that at night, in the 2008-2009, we are proposing that we must face in an approach we say on our school provided non-educator staff. In which case the non-educator staff some or watch should be majority on the watchmen, which covers now one of the concerns that we already have that put problems in equipment then over that are gone. So it is our hope that as we are making our options to try that we can find these acquisitions that for the full time of the concern. In terms of the best science and technology, one of the things that we are interested in is to make that science and technology first instead of the and in that then, in the last 1 or 1.5 years, we have advertised both particularly for secondary schools for math and science. In which case our intention is in each school there should be one and two. And number one for the school now, we are adding one teacher as well for math and science. So that's one. And then two, we have got into some number of partners, like SciCamp, to assist the government in terms of math teaching, and in particular English as well. But one of the individual things is that English is driving the government and it affects our government. And hence, we are putting up some of this problem. It is also our plan. If we were better to improve some kind of particular component, which seems to be easy enough. But I'm afraid to think that we have a shortage of math teachers in the school. So you will advertise a math teacher in the different case is very hard to find. And it seems maybe not even the age time and not focus on the production of math teachers. I think there's a very important question here which is asked that is finding of education in the case and providing very important. But I must be able to say really disengaged is facing has faced a number of challenges. One of them are that was in terms of entrepreneurs, you will find a very high retention rate both at head office and office and food. And a process and a program has been put in place to fit in the makers, particularly ahead of the with the intention to increase support in schools. And our development is starting to function properly. It is our hope that in 2008 and 2009 budget cycle, we'll be able to fit also into the vacancies that exist both in our specific office. Further to say also, one of the challenges that we can give is the number of schools that are too small, which are spread across the spatial distribution of schools, across the region, which they pose a challenge and a threat in the region. And one plan that we are putting in place is a proposal on rationalizing and measuring of schools. And that process has started in terms of the capital of schools, which includes reorganization of the sector of the state as well. The feasibility study is finalized on the reorganization and the reports are available for that. So I'm saying there is a turnaround plan that we have been having identified a number of challenges in that case in help my investors.
Well, that is infrastructure that relates to vacancy rates. That is some of the issues that you are dealing with. We are hoping that having put up that general plan, we are going to improve our advice. Also, I must also indicate that one of the challenges in the Eastern Cape is the maintaining of stability between the trade union movement and the institution. In which case, we are getting into consultation with our social partners in particular on how we make sure that our individual institution produces what is expected. And this is based upon them. So I'm saying that we are in a turnaround strategy which addresses some of the issues raised in the report. And we are hoping that as we move this year and put it in turnaround then, we are going to go.
Thank you very much. Mr. Shopman.
Thank you, Chair. The issue of school libraries was raised. As far as I am aware, the allocation to sports, to arts and culture, is going to do with provincial and regional libraries and municipal libraries and not school libraries. In terms of the personnel expenditure, I want to refer members to page 17. And the personnel expenditure is not 83% in terms of the figures that I have. Actually, currently, in terms of the preliminary outcome, 79.3%. So that must be a typo, moving down to 76.6%. But I think that the fundamental issue is we can't measure. We can only measure a particular norm or a percentage when we're saying that the whole is sufficient. If the whole is not sufficient, we can't say 80% is then adequate or sufficient. And that's where the dilemma between class size and the non-personnel allocation comes about. And so therefore, if we are able to estimate what is a minimum requirement to be able to deliver a set of services, we will then be able to look at the correct ratio. On the other hand, we don't control on a year-to-year budgeting basis conditions of service for educators and in terms of the salary. So the issue is these percentages are likely to change. So it's already passed itself by date, the issue of using 80%. In the 1995-96, it was valid because at that stage our expenditure on personnel was around 96%, 97%, 98%. In fact, the same argument of using 80% can work against us. Because if you bring more money into the budget, there will be an expectation from personnel to say, well, keep personnel expenditure to 80%. So, in terms of the 80% issue, I think the question around norms is, yes, we require national norms and standards. The Education Laws Amendment Bill does indicate a signal norms and standards. But I think what we need to realize is that we haven't yet solved the problem of what is called hard norms and standards and soft norms and standards. And the issue is, we still, as the Education Department, we come up against the arguments of fiscal decentralization, about provincial competencies, etc. And therefore, our normal standards, even in the NOFI schools, are targets. We put them out as targets out there, and we use it as a measurement to measure each other how they're going to that particular target. And clearly, as we demonstrated today, we showed those figures, and it is through persuasion, etc., and of course through other mechanisms. As the chairperson has indicated, that provincial committees, standing committees, select committees, and EXCO needs to begin to play a greater role in the issue of expenditure and education expenditure. And actually, where the difficulty is around it, I don't get a sense of education being a provincial issue. It's a right up there. It's often our minister that has to justify even operational issues. And I think our provincial colleagues need the support. Where in a sense, education is a household issue in a lot of communities, in a lot of communities in our country. And it becomes, it goes to the national, it goes to that local scene where mayors and states, premiers or governors have to particularly answer and stand up and make pronouncements on education issues. So I think, our education issue is an issue we must solve as a nation, rather than an issue that ourselves in education can push. I think we've pushed quite a bit of the boundaries. The outcomes, I think as covered the issue of outcomes. We admit that there's a problem. We're also saying that I think if the question is that you are not giving us the outcome, therefore don't ask us to increase your funding because we're not getting value for money, is an argument I don't know as a nation whether we're going to win or lose. Because education is a very, very, very big ship. And it is where we have to begin to start to take calculated risks in particular areas in spite of some of those outcomes and achievements being low. It means we've got to take those risks but make sure that those risks are calculated in the sense that they leave us and turn the system around in crucial areas. Because here, earlier you said that if we ask for 50 rand and you're given 2 cents, the issue is it comes about to the certain service delivery elements means that you must have the whole allocation or adequacy allocation because you can't have half a product. Because half a product won't give you half efficiency. It may give you zero efficiency. It could be like a car without the wheels. And so the issue is that you may have spent 99% of resources on the car, but if you don't have the wheels, it's not going to particularly move. See, the computer issues, it's an operational issue in terms of the problem, but again, it's an issue on the car without the wheels. If you don't have sufficient funding for security personnel, etc., and the issue is that you try to deal with it in terms of the community, etc. But our evidence doesn't take it away that we must find ways and means of making sure the resources are there. We can't say we're not giving you the resources because it gets stolen. I think we need to find solutions. I know Kauteng has been looking at burglar alarms and security and whatever else, but that will continue to be developed. One possibility is that we may have to, because we can't make schools integrated into the community with a community ownership, where things are stolen, we may have to find another mode of delivery around computers. So it may be the partnership with communities where it is given over to a community entrepreneur who can manage the center and we as schools can use it during the daytime and at night it continues with the entrepreneur providing the services to the community. So the issue of low-fee schools is really a managerial issue, but also it's an issue around data. I think what we need to come up with in the absence of any other poverty measures, but I hear that we're talking about indigency policy of the municipalities. In the absence of us having, we have to have an equitable parameter where we say that initially you must take the data, the best data that is available, which is census data. That's supposed to give us a broad brush approach. It doesn't breaking up our socio-economic, into the socio-economic profiles of our country. But the North East Centre said clearly that there must be ground truth, that we must test the issue of those absurdities that arise. If we have 2 schools, one next to each other, and one is quartile 1 and another one quartile 3, is that can be smoothed out even before the allocation starts.
Now, I think it's strengthening the communication issues. It is also, it's not only our responsibility as a Department of Education, because it's often people in working community are most easily able to spot them. And what we need to see is what is the process in which those, whether it's community development workers, whether it's members of parliament, whoever it is, that are able to inform the department or the bureaucracy, say, here's an anomaly, under what circumstances are you able to fix it? We also say that the data is not absolute in telling us what's poverty. It gives us an indication. In the end of the day, the data may tell us that the community is very poor. In the meantime, it may be very rich. In fact, we have discovered that now with no fee schools, because suddenly, when we started declaring no fee schools, schools that were declared in quartile 1 and 2 said, no, we've got enough money in this community. Can you please move us up to quartile 3 or quartile 4? In terms of, I think the question around the issue of the FFC formula. The FFC doesn't take 0 to 18, it takes 5 to 17. That is your population, right? 5 to 17 is the population. And then it takes enrollment from grade R to grade 12. And so, I mean, the differences in any age group, they are so minor that they're negligible, because we're talking of millions of learners. And in any case, we're using 50% enrollment and 50% population. So even if a province doesn't provide education to a single learner, they're still going to get 50% for people just being in the province. So, the issue is not so much with the input of the formula. What we regard as a problem with the formula that the FSC has already identified is an issue that it is poverty neutral, the education component part. It's poverty neutral. It just counts you as a population, it counts you in terms of the enrollment. However, health is poverty bias, because it counts number of people in medical aid and number of people not. And therefore the pressure, as our education policies are more pro-poor, it begins to put more pressure on poorer provinces to be able to deal with those issues. Those issues, individual issues, change that members have raised, where a school is forced to appoint STP posts, is clearly illegal, and the report must be brought up, and we need to take that particular action up. If a school has been allocated 4 posts, the school is entitled to those 4 posts. And we need to find out why is it that if they have been allocated their 4 posts, those 4 posts are not being posted. Even if it means a temporary, so it's a managerial issue. The post provisioning is going to be revised, and we're looking at a target or a norm in the post provisioning that talks not of 80% personnel expenditure per province, but begins to talk of an interval of a class size. And so that if anybody goes to any particular school, count the number of learners, count the number of teachers, you are supposed to get that magic number, whatever the target of the norms is. Chair, the Education Laws Amendment Bill will kick in terms of different phases. Immediately some of the issues around the safety and security will come in, but in terms of norms and standards, it is a long consultative process that the minister will have to undergo. Firstly, it's a draft norms and standards. Secondly, is that we have to take it up in our MINDEC or Council of Education Ministers, because we have to get some consultation with provinces, etc. And then if they have financial implications, we have to go through the long route of the protocol system in terms of the intergovernmental framework certification. If they soft norms, then we can go out at policy, but also in terms of norms and standards, we're going to go for public. So, my estimation, because of my experience, once you start with norms and standards, it takes about 2 years before they really come into setting. These amendments to the school funding norms start almost 3 years, just to be able to look at the issue of no fee schools. I was told that those questions will be asked, so I'm not going to. The member said, Gina Levy, I'll come back to you, so you didn't finish the question, so I just wrote, Gina Levy,
No, I'm not answering it yet, sir, because I said all I wanted to say was that in the school to be all schools, not just you.
So I think there was a question around the issue of per capita. Now, I think in terms of the per capita, it's not necessarily the per capita must be the same. Because if we have an expectation it must be the same, then the issue is we don't recognize it in the issue of efficiency. Because you can really spend less, but have more efficient processes. But at the moment, currently, it's just an indicator. Also, sometimes it's about the reality of the situation, as I explained in Gauteng, around they have more private resources to be able to deal with it. But also the issue of qualifications and etc. of educators. It does also reflect in inequalities, but we've got to break it down to be able to see where the inequality are. And Chairman, the last point is that you raised the issue of multi-grade issue. If we must tackle a policy issue at some point, is that whether we close down every one-person school and then try to provide transport or other means of getting learners that are clustered in small villages and small communities, or whether we should resource additionally that particular school. And perhaps I would take your reading to be, what have we then done to be able to ensure that there's effective and efficient multi-grade teaching? How are we able to assist that educator to be able to teach that curriculum? So Chair, I think I've covered all the points that are raised.
Mr. Brown, KVN must be just thinking about this question. On the National Treasurer's presentation on page 9, they are saying, it's on provincial learner spending. KZN in Bombo Northwest are below national average from 07-08 onward. Well, what might be the reason for that after Mr. Brown?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I don't know where to start.
Anyway.
I want to talk about this, if you would, Chair, but I think I'll have to take Mr. Patel on a short call on how the equitable share probably work, and then we can resolve it outside of this house. What is important to note about the equitable share is, number one, it is a blunt instrument. You put data together and say, objectively, how can you divide resources so that you don't get questions, why do you give X more and Y less? So it's to build that kind of objectivity in it. Now, there are advantages and disadvantages, and there will be problems in life, but it's more objective. Now, coming to the point of poverty, and this is something that we've engaged the department on there. And what we have agreed with the department was to say, because there is a bit of a poverty bias in your policy, the extent of that poverty bias, in a way, right, can be captured in a poverty component. And that's the reason why we have included the poverty component into it, which is 3%. And if one, what one needs then to do... No, he's agreeing. What we need to do is to decompose that budget then and say, what percentage of the budget itself is really pro-poor, is the poverty part of it? And do we adequately cover that element of it? If we take at most the no-fee schools one, clearly, you know, it's about 3 billion, which is roughly about 3% of education spending in a province, which is, in terms of weighting, relatively to what we cover in the poverty component, actually, itself there. Now, what really needs to happen in this case, and I hope at some point we will move away from it, is to say, we've got this equitable share, we've got budget. If we look on page 14, I don't know what part of it of my slide is it, of the book, we're going to see that this education budget has been growing 4% in real terms for the past 3-4 years. It is going to grow about 4.5% above inflation over the next 3 years. All right. So the resources are there. The housing budget next year would be, or at least this year, is a 3 billion rand higher than in the previous year. There is some growth actually in this budget. Last year, the education department underspent this budget by 1.3 billion. You see. So what I'm appealing for is that we shift away from input and keep on saying we're getting less money. We must move to a point where we say, with the money that we get, what is it that we are getting realistically? And that is the part of the debate that's never there when we engage with the Department of Education. Now, let's come back in terms of how when we go at the provincial level, there's impact at the provincial level. The National Treasury goes to provinces. We sit there and observe in many cases. In many cases, it may not be the case for all provinces. Provincial education departments are not articulating their own positions and policies well for the Treasury to understand. In many cases, the Treasury would highlight, you forgot about that and you forgot about that. We, when we are there, we also highlight some of these things. Now, we don't say that the process itself is a very good process and it's working 100%. There are cases where provincial, and I emphasize the point so that we move away from the notion that treasuries are making these budgets. They make recommendations to the EXCO. In fact, when I was in the Free State 3 years ago, the MSC for Education in the Free State was part of the MTEC process, and she was complaining about the growth in her budget. But then I retorted by telling her, but MSC, you are the senior member in your executive council, and you should object when the EXCO endorses a cut in your budget or the growth in your budget is not to the extent that you really want it. So there are these flaws within the system that we need to fix. Then generally there are other provinces that are just doing other things. And what we try to do in the Treasury is we have in December, we've got benchmark exercises where we interrogate these budgets and we highlight to provincial departments, provincial treasuries, you have done the wrong thing in the following areas. Go and fix these things. In some cases, provincial treasuries will explain. In the case of Gauteng, for example, they said, look here, they have underspent the education budget by about 500 million. So we're not going to add any money to that budget because of what needs to happen. The education ELRC things must be finalized, and then we will put it back in there. But we have it. We've got agreement. Now they explain this thing to us. Then in some cases, there are cases where provinces give us excuses and we tell them these are not the right things to do. And we highlight to them what are the areas. And surprisingly, and we can show it to the committee, for the past 5 to 6 years, all the points that we told those treasuries were that the allocations are wrong. They go in adjustment budgets and in many cases it gets fixed there. Which is late because that's not how you need to do budgets at the end of the day. But I think we need to shift away in a big way from talking about inputs and focusing on outputs and outcomes. If we're not going to do that, I think we will be failing the system. Thank you.
Well, I've never heard you so passionate and agitated. It was very useful. In fact, you're right. I remember at some stage, I think it's last year or last financial year, where some of these were brought to the fore by National Treasury itself, when the very Department of Education and EXCO themselves had under-budgeted for education. And that was what brought to the attention of everybody by National Treasury, very much correct. Baba, let's hear what you've got to say here.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. After Mr. Brown's input, I might need to also go on a short course on provisional equitable share. Because it is very difficult to give a specific answer on the reasons why we are seeing such a low capital expenditure as a percentage of the national average. But I would indeed have, using the colorful slides that Mr. Patel was using earlier on, do help us, I guess, that indeed the question of the provincial executive share does play a role. However, it's not only that. It is indeed the issue raised by Mr. Brown of budget allocations within provinces. The data from the... that Chairperson, I can assure you that's not applicable in Wales of Macau. We are very articulate on this matter. We almost every week we make presentations. And it was brought back with lightning speed. Because we overspent by 103 million rand after the 100 million rand was taken. So it's back with lightning speed, Chairperson. Our predictions were proved absolutely correct. We think, Chairperson, that really the internal allocation plays a huge role. And the decline which is shown by National Treasury really is showing that per capita we will continue to spend less and less, which really is a big problem for us, because there are certain things that we won't be able to do which we might wish to do. But it also forces us to actually think creatively about what we need to do. Because when you realize we are short of resources, when you are below the national average, you have to find useful ways of dealing with the issue. For instance, we've just had a curriculum conference last week where we are moving very, very fast towards the addressing the question of curriculum research, which addresses issues like the absence of specialist schools, particularly in poor areas. And we're saying, let's look at special characteristics and able to locate some of these special schools, particularly in the most disadvantaged of areas. We are dealing also, for instance, with the question of consolidating small farm and rural schools, because we recognize indeed that if two teachers teach a number of learners and they have to specialize in five subjects, that's not quality education at all. So quality is compromised. We are looking at that question of consolidating the schools. But we are fully aware of the political context in which this kind of consolidation has to occur. Because in some instances, a road separates two schools simply on the basis that two chiefs are on the different sides of the road. And they are going to be delivering if they have two small schools. But for us, it does not make educational sense. So it's not a straightforward matter. I say there are serious political implications in our attempt to do so. And we are trying to engage traditional communities and the local communities in addressing this question. We did, by the way, in case they can take a decision, for instance, in regard to one teacher school. We took a decision that there can be no one teacher school in KZN. Every school, no matter if it qualifies in terms of the national formula to have one teacher, we took a decision that there will be a minimum of two teachers. And that is, we have to budget for that. Because if you've got the one teacher school, if one teacher is absent, 100% of the teaching staff is not there. And there's no schooling. So that's a decision that is to take, but still, it's a small step towards ensuring that learners get proper education across the grades in the schooling system. We are also, Chairperson, moving swiftly towards the question of focusing on literacy and numeracy in the foundation phase. And this is a national program. Precisely to address the question that colleague Brown is saying is not being addressed, the question of outcomes. Because if you study carefully the utterances of the current minister, the issue is we've tried to provide quality, we've tried to provide access to education, That's why the gross enrollment ratio, net enrollment ratio, is very high relative to countries with which you compare ourselves. But the question now is, when the learners are in the schools, what is it that they get? And therefore that has got an influence on outcomes. And we have identified certain areas which we have to intervene in nationally in order for us to raise outcomes. So the question of outcomes has become key in the educational family these days. Thank you, Chairperson.
It's not
I don't think Mr. Brown declared that he used to be a teacher. I think the issue on the overcrowding, I think if you look on the Treasury's presentation on page 4, and if you look at the issue on the second ratio, which is the number of learners per school, you will see that we've got the highest density per school in the entire country. It's 860 per school compared to the national average of 475, which is almost double the national average. And the main reason for this is that we have a migration pattern that we've managed to consolidate over the last 3 to 4 years. And that is that there are 84,000 learners that are migrating into Gauteng, and approximately 40,000...
No, just before you proceed.
You see, one of the issues reported by your MEC is that some of the schools are standing empty, by the way. And so, in the context of what you are saying, how do you deal with those matters?
Yes.
And then we have a net outflow of around 44,000. So we have a net increase annually of about 36,000 learners. So learners come into the province for a year and then they move back again. But they are moving into areas that are informal settlements, that are on the verge of economic development areas, and therefore they are not in sort of formal township areas. If you look at the issue of empty schools, the majority of empty schools that we have is in and around Soweto, not in any other area. And in Soweto, there is a historical problem from pre-1994, that when they build schools in a specific geographic area, they address the language section of their community. So in the same community, small distinct community, you would find 5 schools servicing 5 different language groups. But even during the time of the DT, those schools were underpopulated. So it is not as if it is a new sort of emergence that the schools are becoming empty and as a result of that is migration. I think the big problem is two things. One, in terms of the schools that are small, we are consolidating them. We've managed to reduce schools approximately from 360 about 4 to 5 years ago to around 90 that are now what we could deem to be small schools in urban areas. And we're consolidating them. The problem is that the community around the schools have also aged. And therefore there is no natural feeder area for the school anymore.
So people are
Yes, or they have sent their kids that have grown into other areas to find their own check. And therefore they migrate out of the area. So we have a problem that we need. We may have to find ways of utilizing these empty buildings. The biggest problem is that we are under pressure around having to bus almost 50,000 learners to get them to school. And that is because we cannot build schools in informal settlements until the area has been formally declared or they've been resettled into a formal area. And so we have this problem where we would have to bus that we, in terms of road policy, we're not allowed to bus them for more than 15 kilometers. And so we would have to at least put temporary classrooms in the nearest schools to accommodate those learners. So there are large numbers of schools in and around Soweto that we will never utilize until the natural cycle of population change takes place. As people get old and they die off, the houses get sold to younger people and they move in and then there's a regeneration again. Now we're finding that in the inner city around, in and around Johannesburg at the south of Johannesburg, a lot of the school properties were sold off or handed over to Telkom, to the military, and so on, and are now being used for alternative purposes. But there's a whole new population that have moved into the south of Johannesburg and we no longer have schools for that. There's new housing in the inner city and we don't have any properties in the inner city. So the issue is simply, yes, we have these schools. We are now trying to build a model, a 30 to 40 year model on population changes in order to know whether we should mothball schools or whether we should dispose of it. Well, we can't do simply dispose of it at this point in time. So I think to a large extent, the problem that is emerging as a result of this migration and the pressure is that we can, because there's a shortage of classrooms, what is not shown on these slides is the actual class sizes. And you will find that the actual class sizes are beyond 40. Right? And as a result of that, you will find that our learner educator ratios are higher. Even if we have the ability, I'll give you some examples. In some schools, we've got teachers time sharing classrooms. Because there isn't enough classrooms. For half the day, the teacher sits in the staff room with some of the kids and they wait for a classroom and then they time share. So yeah, we have to. The model also says that it's got to be them a teacher and it's you for the teacher. But we have a second problem. And the problem that is emerging is that if you look at the provincial allocation for CAPEX for the last 10 years, it has not increased at all. The only portion of our CAPEX budget that's increasing is our portion of the PIG. So we've been receiving about 507 million consistently for around 10 years. For CAPEX, for capital expenditure. Yet we have a backlog, an established backlog, with plans. I thought we had a written report explaining that. I think the real problem that has emerged as a result of that factor and other factors is that we now have a backlog of 142 schools with plans and properties and no money to build.
No, this is education that was underperforming. And as a result of your underperformance, everybody else was punished. In other words, health who were performing better were punished because of you. And we had intervened to unlock that thing. Because we had said the sector that is underperforming must be the one that is punished. And so it's about your own. In fact, you also got money wrongly. Precisely because you are underperforming, this is what we were raising with your own provincial government. What was the basis for you to be receiving more money from the CIG when you were underperforming? You can sum up of it.
I think we've passed those bad days. I think we now have 52 schools on track for delivery.
Yeah, not bad days. Let me just
You know what? One of the things you will do yourself when you come here in next month, your first area of discussion is the understanding you will get in the last administration. That's understanding. That's where we'll discuss the problem. Right? Because as we get into this financial year, what are the risks and the possible risks again in current financial year?
So you're still not out of this problem. All right, proceed then.
On the capital portion, at least. I think we're now on track with 52 schools that will be delivered. If there is no backlog and problems with the service providers, we would take delivery in January of all the schools. And I think and in the country, that will be the single biggest delivery of schools, not classrooms, of schools, in the last 30 years. with 14 fields, underdeveloped but with 14 fields. They will have to cross the road. I think the issue of the security, I think that is a big issue. It's been addressed as part of our bid for additional funding for personnel. But we've had to convert of our ICT budget, the housing online budget, we had to convert 3% from capital to recurrent expenditure to put into place security measures, including armed response and alert buttons in schools and so on. We've seen a decline, but it's still a higher scale. And the problem is that a lot of the classrooms that are not sort of self-contained, people break into the classroom next door and break through the wall. And there is no alarm or anything that can help you with that particular answer. I think the other issues have been raised. I think the one issue that has been raised is the issue of the no-fee school. I think Mr. Patel from DOE indicated what the norms prescribe, and I think out of our compliance, this is what we undertook. We did not use the quality of the buildings of the school. We are using SETOR Africa data. We are using 9 factors. I can't remember all of them, but it would include things such as woman-headed household, family literacy level, the income of the family. All of those things are coming from the SETOR Africa data. When we use wards in Gauteng as a way of trying to create a homogeneous group of schools, we found that it didn't work. So if you take Alexandra as an example, it would be part of Centers. And Centers would then throw out the ward data at the ward level. And Alex would have to be declared quintile 5. So in Gauteng, we then decided to use sub-place level, which is lower than the ward. But the problem is that sub-place can be a fence. So there could be 2 schools that are separated by a fence, and that fence is the line that divides the sub-places. But a single family's income in those sub-places can allow you to discriminate between 2 schools in order to rank them. And therefore, it is possible to put those schools into quinta. However, if you look at the distribution of the scores, you will find that they're so marginal that it is actually not a good determinant of whether the school should be no fee, that the quintile should be a good determinant. And I think that is what we will address in the process. But it is possible in the discrimination process to be able to distinguish between one sub-place and another sub-place.
Now, see, part of the problem, Mr. Brown, that needs to be dealt with here. Especially this thing of empty classes and other empty classes. How do you approach them in the context of the neighborhood development? Rather, we also approach this in the context of this thing called sustainable community. That's this thing by the I think it's one month. But number two, which then you giving out stats on off of public of learner research. Part of what I would have loved to see from the terms of the application. The primary school learners, secondary school learners, the needy, etc. But also when you go to the school nutrition issue, targeted kinds of learners, those that are accessing. By now we should know that must be clear. And also those that are targeted. And also the reasons why those that are targeted are not accessing. I think that also must be something that is coming out. But also on page 25, under the learner allocations, I think part of what you must be talking about here. What then are the implications of these allocations for the quality of education, one. But number two, how are these things allocation translated to a better life and a better quality?
education. I mean, bottom line is that these budgets are just growing phenomenally across the MTA. And finally, are we seeing these better outcomes that all of us want to boast about? Now, having said that, let me give Mr. Kwate his last word. He's not on death row.
I just want to check whether the national treasury is also measuring the capacity of these. So as the budget grows, for example, over the MTA, are you also able to measure whether the capacity also, on the one hand, to spend and to bring about better results, also moves in tandem with the growth of the budget over that because I think that is very important that we address. I think earlier on we talked about the issue that we are under budgeting in certain departments, health, education, and I can't remember the first one. But we don't blame that to the capacity to spend a new city with that one. You see, we're going to get a different picture altogether in November when we do the year spending in the first quarter and the second quarter. On just the issue that we have. So end up asking that question, what's the area that we also need to look at? The second issue, just a comment to the response from the Patel on the issue of the implementation of norms. Since next week, we are going out to public hearing on that bridge. Yeah? It's with us now, who are taking it to the people. When we deal with those issues of norms and standards, there are those issues that are listed there in here. They really talk to the challenges that they are facing on the ground. And it's going to create a lot of expectations that with the passing of that gift in the attempt and the suspended by the president, the department is likely to immediately implement that. So what you said that they are likely to take about 2 years before the actual implementation is worrying. And because by the time you put those proposals in that gift, but we knew that this is a challenge over the years that is in the union, but which has no legal tools to address. So I thought your planning would move parameters while you prepare the game, also prepare other issues related to the introduction of those norms and standards and the people that immediately is offended to, which immediately moves to the implementation. Because the challenge was there, you know? So the worry for me, and that's
I'm not sure whether Mr. Kwate is going on to invite them to be part of the discussion of practice so that the youth are dealing with the provincial department of education. They are also there. So that if you engage with them together under one group. That's again to be engaging on those matters. That I'm not sure. But if you are a good one, just now to say let's extend an invitation to them to be part of those past years. So that if you engage with those matters that are already there, would you consider that? Are you ready to send somebody to participate? Now let's hear what you have to say about this.
When we briefed the committee on the team after the briefing here, the department was there. That was the provincial department. I want to agree with you because what we sent, even from the provincial department this time, when we engaged them, and to what extent are they on board on the very field that is emanating from their own department? We found that they have found one thing.
they don't have the fence. So it's difficult. They are almost some of them getting it for the first time, like other members of the tropical extent. While they are the originators of that thing, for that thing. So I saw that they have to do that. And it's like I said, they are the same. Have your own practice left as a department at the tropical level, and we treat you also as a stakeholder. And we will make the war we go to once again, so that we get to fight the other issues that you feel very strongly that they have left out in the day. As a department, you never need to take it, but your input will help us a great deal because they are also professionals on the issue. So I think that we see how we deal with it. Can we invite the National Department to start meeting where they will be in the department before we go out in the public again?
Mr. Patel, are you ready to send somebody there?
Okay, yeah. Can we take the opportunity first to welcome our CFO, but there weren't any questions, so yes, we will do that in the first place. Thank you very much. Let me just talk to the issue around capacity, because if once you're going to link capacity to allocation, you may have a problem that you may not allocate anything. That's the one risk that you have. Now, let me give an example. If one checks, for example, the underspending that we had in capital for the past 2 years, if you can recall in the beginning, before we had IBEX, if we had to first intervene, build the capacity, and then come, then you know you would have lagged a few years. So it is rather difficult to link those two there. Now, if you look at sometimes the structure of budgets, if you take education, 79-80% of the budget is picked up by personnel, for example, so which is a button that can just be pressed to make allocations. Then there are a number of other areas of spending which can be managed basically properly in terms of that. But when you come to, say, for example, the school building programs and all of that, if you say, first build the capacity, then we give you the money, then you're going to have a problem. Now, what we've done in the Treasury, basically, is to have some kind of a capacity building program for infrastructure delivery. But at the same time, give allocations. So that people understand the allocations, we wrap them around the knuckles, and then we deal with capacity as you move forward.
All right. There's no matter of life and death, eh? And we, I think today we also do not speak about soya beans. So, can we then attend this new school meeting? It does appear that the kinds of issues that have come out here, I think this time would necessitate a debate in the house. And so it would also mean that we might want to invite even the other portfolios that are not there. That to be part of this discussion. But that is because of some of the issues that have come out of the interaction. Can we thank everybody for coming and for the useful input you've made? We are adjourned today, it's Wednesday. On Saturday, we must be making ready our bride stands and everything. The poker around the hall. I'm a bok around the hall. The cup is ready, it's coming. Already somebody is ready to engrave South Africa, 2007. Meeting at 10.
So when I put future shepherds and
continues.
Now, what I'm trying to do is to get 10,000 people.